Beekeepers, hi. Jim Tew here, reading you my article for Bee Culture Magazine, February 2024. It's a quiet, rainy day. It's a good day just to sit here and think about bees and talk about bees. I hope you can follow along. Several years ago, I taught a class at Auburn University on honeybee behavior and biology. Questions came up. Many times I had to go review and check and confirm. I couldn't just whimsically answer off the top of my aging head. And I ended up unintentionally accumulating a list of questions from that and from other sources. So this quiet February month, when not a lot of bee work is going on for most of us, I decided that I would review those questions with you and just have an overall general discussion of randomly selected points from bee behavior and biology. There's no shortage of questions. Answers are not always easy to derive, and sometimes they are interspersed with opinion. So it may be that days, weeks, months, years from now, that my answers that I provided here today will need to be reviewed. In no order of priority or category, let's do this. What flower colors attract honeybees? It's been my experience that no specific color attracts or repels bees as such. We have a good idea that bees see ultraviolet, violet, blue, blue-green, yellow, and probably an orange color. They don't see red or infrared. Under appropriate conditions, any flower that rewards a foraging bee with either pollen or nectar would be attractive. Okay, since bees don't see red, would I be smart to wear red-colored clothing when working around bees? Well, listeners, we don't know for sure what a bee sees when exposed to the color red. A guess is that it's probably a drab color of purple. Wearing the proper type of clothes that were red certainly wouldn't hurt, but neither would it be of a great help to you. Bees combine color vision with an awareness of smell, movement, magnetic forces, and microelectrical currents. So it's not just color, but white remains a good choice. I didn't mention this in the article, but many years ago I used a military-style flashlight with a red filter on it to do my night work in honeybee colonies. My thought was, would I stop or slow down bees from coming to the light so much? And you know, I think maybe there was some improvement, but it's hard to tell how active are the bees, how big are the colonies, temperature, all kind of other reasons could have made the red light look better, look worse. Overall, I can't tell that red is a good color to wear. I can tell you that black is not a good color to wear. It's hot, and for whatever reasons, bees just don't seem to care for the color black. I know, maybe it's a bear, but we don't know why. Has the longevity of bees been altered by genetic engineering or by evolution? Or by both? The longevity of honeybees has not yet been altered by genetic engineering to my knowledge at this time. Someone could certainly do that in the future, I suppose. The process of evolution may have, during the bee's long history, affected the bee's lifespan one way or another. But we've no reason to think that the bee's lifespan has been very much different from what it is now. Improvements in the beekeeper's ability to recognize and control diseases has probably lengthened the bee's life somewhat, but even that's not been shown clearly, or not in any way that I could find. I frequently heard the adage that a drone has no father, but has a grandfather. How is that possible? Normally, in most animals, fertilization must occur for a new organism to be produced. This is not true with insects, necessarily. A drone will arise from an unfertilized egg in a process called parthenogenesis. A fertilized egg results in a worker or a queen and requires normal fertilization procedures. Therefore, a drone had a grandfather. This grandfather was required to produce the drone's mother, but due to parthenogenesis, it did not have a father. Consequently, drones only have half as many chromosomes as workers and queens. So what are pheromones, and how do they affect bees? A pheromone is a chemical produced by various glands of bees that produces a behavioral or physiological response in another bee of the same species. It's a chemical message that is usually produced as a liquid and transmitted probably as a liquid or maybe a vapor. I don't know for sure. Bees use pheromones to mark food sources, to help swarms issue and settle, to call to colony defense, to identify different types of brood and mating behavior. Oh, listeners, and so many other ways. It's probably the most common way bees communicate within the dark hive. Do bees really do a dance when they find food? Listeners, the word dance is our word. Bees are not tapping some of their six legs to a musical beat as such when they go through the dance procedure. I mean, I suppose looking back on the history of that term, it could have been the recruitment behavior. But all of those are so much more wordy and not as descriptive as the simple word dance. When a forager finds a rewarding food source, she returns to the hive and goes through a ritualized reenactment of the trip, which, for lack of a better word, we humans call a dance. The specifics of the dance vary with the races of bees, but in general, food sources farther than about 100 meters from the colony results in the forager giving information about the distance, the direction, the taste, the odor, and the quality or the amount of the food source. Bees may also dance to indicate new colony nest sites and water sources. How does the round dance vary from the wagtail dance? Well, let's start with the wagtail dance and the figure eight pattern that it has. The round dance is really the same as the wagtail. It's just compressed on itself so that it looks more like a circle. In some races of bees, the round dance is used when food finds are as near as maybe 10 to 12 yards from the hive. Listeners, at this point, I've got questions. So if I put a feeder on a colony, and it's just a foot above the nest, so do they do a round dance when they say that they found food at the top of the hive? Does that mean that bees come boiling out and go searching all around within 10 meters of the hive when it's just a foot away above them? So I don't know how that works, or is it a different pheromone, a different procedure? Do they use footprint pheromones, and they, in fact, don't use the round dance for something as near as that? I don't know. There's still no shortage of questions about this whole dance recruitment procedure. Is it possible for one bee colony to be smarter than another? It seems that in the past, some of my hives have been better foraging units and survived the winter better. But that was that because of innate colony intelligence? Yes, there can be difference in learning abilities of different races. For instance, Carniolans have been shown to learn to forage better than Italian bees if the feeding site was plainly marked. Also, Carniolans are better at harvesting honeydew than Italian strains of bees. This is not a comparison of actual intelligence, however, but probably an indicator of adaptation to different geographical areas. What are the best-known races of honeybees presently in the U.S.? I tried to write that concisely and briefly in the article, but this is just a morass. Bees are so radically interbred and queens mate with multiple drones. It's really tricky to say that a particular bee is from a particular strain or race of bees. But given all that, the superficial overview is that Apis mellifera, the common honeybee, has 24 races or subspecies, but there are four that are common worldwide, and all have been imported into the U.S., all of these four. The Great Caucasian Mountain Bee, Apis mellifera caucasica, are bees that are commonly called Caucasians. I don't see those strains much anymore. The Italian honeybee, Apis mellifera ligustica, is the most common honeybee race, and basically has been spread all over the world. This is still by far the most common generalized bee, honeybee, in the U.S. The Carniolan bee, Apis mellifera carnica, is from Austria-Yugoslavian border and is called the Carniolan bee. This is a popular bee in the U.S. I think that when I started more than 50 years ago, that there were still the remnants of the next bee, the common European black bee, Apis mellifera mellifera. For many, many years, this was the most popular bee in the U.S., honeybee, before the Europeans were introduced. This dark strain was almost black, was aggressive and flighty, and was replaced by the European strain. During the years of Africanization, when we were all concerned about killer bees and how ferocious those bees were, I was reminded of those stingy, dark bees that I first started with, trying to take bees from a tree or from the wall of a house. And I wonder if I was dealing with the end strain of those bees as they were more and more replaced by the European strain. Regardless, it's been my personal impression that current beekeepers are more interested in things like varroa resistance and wintering success than in acquiring a designated race of honeybees exhibiting specific characteristics. I mean, when I was a young beekeeper, people wanted Caucasians because they were gray bees and they were different. They wanted Italian bees because they produced nice white cappings, or Carniolans because they followed the season better. But now it seems like we're looking primarily at disease resistance, mite resistance, wintering capability, more so than a particular geographically designed bee. If this is true, if my perception is true, then it's a significant change from the preferences that we made many decades ago. A basic question: what is bee brood? It's all stages of the immature bee, regardless of the age. Bees undergo complete metamorphosis as they change from an egg to an adult. The stages of development are egg, larvae, or a grub or a worm, a pupae, sometimes called the resting stage. You can also have a pre-adult stage, the prepupae, as it changes more and more to the adult. And then the final stage is the mature adult that emerges. There's all kind of different variations on times of development. About 21 days for a worker, 20 days, 22 days, but around 21 days for a worker to go through this process. Here's a practical question. What's the best way to get the queen to lay brood all the way to the edges of the frame? I don't remember the specifics of that question, but it must have been that the beekeeper wanted as many bees as they could get from a single hive. I responded, The queen, with the assistance of her workers, avoids putting brood in areas near the walls or near the openings of the hive. To develop properly, bee brood requires a stable temperature of around 93 to 96 degrees Fahrenheit. Air temperatures can quickly change in the areas near the nest periphery that would disrupt brood development. There is no common beekeeping procedure that will encourage a queen to produce brood along the outer edges of the brood nest. You know, possibly providing some form of insulation on the outside of the hive would help, or I wonder sometimes if these expanded polystyrene-type plastic hives that have more insulatory qualities, would that encourage the queen to pack more brood into a frame during the intensive brood-producing areas in spring and early summer? I don't know. Does a bee egg actually hatch like a bird egg? Nope, it does not. The outer covering of the bee egg, called the chlorion, dissolves. It doesn't crack or break, but it dissolves as the larvae within the egg is ready to emerge. The egg, which is attached to the cell base by the smaller end, not the larger end, gently lays over on the cell base to change from an egg, or dissolve from an egg, to a very, very small C-shaped larvae. In essence, the queen shell just dissolves rather than breaking open. So don't be looking around or expecting eggshells to fall out of a brood comb. Ain't gonna happen. How long does a larval stage last? Quickly, just 6 days for the larvae to convert from the egg to the larvae to the pupae. Several times while attending talks on bee breeding and genetics, I've heard the term super sister used. Pretty clear what a half-sister is and sisters, but what are super-sisters? And do they look or act any different from normal bees? As best I can understand, here it is. If a queen mates with drones that are her brothers, the workers she produces are super-sisters. If the queen mates with drones that have the same mother, the workers she produces are full sisters. If the queen mates with drones that have different mothers, the workers she produces are half-sisters. And no, super-sisters do not look any different from workers that are half-sisters or full-sisters, and these super-sister worker bees are not considered to be abnormal or dysfunctional in any way. Why do some fertile eggs become workers while others become queens? Is it just a food difference, as I've read? Yes, to an extent, it is a food difference. A developing queen is fed a highly nutritious diet, having a hormonal component throughout her development. Workers, on the other hand, are fed special diets for about 3 days, this highly nutritional diet, and then for the remainder of their development, they are then fed a diet composed predominantly of undigested pollen and carbohydrates. So queens get a better diet with a hormonal content than what the workers seemingly get. I bet you, listeners, that this is one of the answers that's going to change when we learn more and more about this whole thing. Hey, just exactly what is queen substance? Queen substance is really several chemicals, a chemical concert of pheromones secreted by the mandibular gland of the queen. The inhibition of worker ovaries is a sex attractant to stabilize a swarm. These are all examples of the activities of queen pheromones or queen substance. Used to be called inhibine in the old books before we knew what it was. It had the name inhibine. These compounds are accumulated by workers when they touch, groom, or feed the queen and are then passed from bee to bee during food exchange and physical contact. Artificial sweetener is inexpensive and easy to mix, sometimes compared to sugar. Can I use it to make sugar syrup for feeding bees? No, you cannot. Honeybees don't have the same taste perception as humans. Though artificial sweeteners are certainly obvious to us, bees ignore it. They may collect it as a water source, but not as a nectar source. Why do honeybees occasionally collect sweat from me? I've noticed on hot summer days, worker bees lick perspiration from my arms. Well, listeners, I can't say for sure, but there's several possibilities. Bees, as do most animals, require salt for normal physiological functions. In fact, foraging bees are commonly seen collecting water from salt blocks and animal feedlots. They need salt in their diet. However, they may be collecting trace elements or minerals, while we are simply only aware of the salt that's present. Under extreme water shortage conditions, bees could simply just need water badly enough and are collecting it from anywhere and everywhere that it can be found. How well developed is the honeybee's sense of taste? Honeybees can taste sweet, sour, salty, and bitter. They are especially good at detecting low levels of salt and sugar. An old question that comes up still fairly commonly. What's this story about a honeybee not being able to mathematically fly? Someone is obviously wrong. This question just doesn't go away. It just stays out there. It just lingers. It was a bumblebee that was reported to be mathematically unable to fly, not the honeybee, and that too was wrong. Bumblebees certainly can fly. Indeed, it seems there were also problems with the mathematical calculations and probably not a full understanding of the mechanics of insect flight. Obviously, both insects readily fly. Also, no consideration was given to most bees and wasps' technique that they have of connecting the rear wing to the larger front wing before taken to the air. When these wings are connected with wing hooks called hamulli, the two larger wings have more lift than the smaller unconnected wings. So, both bumblebees and honeybees are excellent flyers, but rest assured, this question will come up again at some future meeting site. What happens when a honeybee scents? S-C-E-N-T-S, scents. Honeybee workers will scent to help orient other honeybees to such things as a food source, a new nest site to locate the queen, or to help settle a swarm. The nasonoff gland produces a combination of citrulls, geranol, neurolic, and geranic acids. The scent gland is on top of the bee's seventh abdominal segment. When she pulls those segments apart, the gland is exposed by the bee. She fans her wings to force the airborne chemicals away from the worker's abdomen and thereby exposing nearby bees to the location or to the information content of this pheromone. Scenting is a common procedure in honeybees. They will scent at a food source. They will scent at a water source. They will scent at a swarm site. They will scent on the landing board. They use this behavior all the time. In my observation hive, and while observing bees on combs in a colony, I've noticed bees feeding each other. Can all bees feed themselves, and can the drone and the queen also feed themselves? Food sharing, called trophallaxis, among workers, drones, and the queen, is in fact common, necessary, critical. In fact, it's required for various chemicals to be distributed throughout the colony. Newly emerged bees may have initial difficulties in soliciting food from other workers, but they learn quickly or they die. All drones, workers, queens can feed themselves if it becomes necessary. In addition to being larger than workers, a drone appears to have larger eyes. Is that true? And can drones see better than workers? Yes, the drone does have larger eyes than the worker or the queen. But it's anyone's guess whether or not the drone can actually see better than a worker. A drone's eyes completely touch on top of the drone's head. That can be a useful feature for a beekeeper when learning to determine drones from workers. So can drones see better? You would think, but we just can't prove it. I know honeybees can't close their eyes, but do they sleep at night? Listeners, many years ago, I was specifically told that bees, and indeed all other insects, do not sleep. They have periods of inactivity, but they never doze off. But more recent research, just in the last few years, has shown that bees, at night, pass through a physiological state that is like mammalian sleep. So it would seem that bees do have periods of inactivity akin to our concepts of going to bed. Similar but different can bees hear. This one's tricky. Dr. Spangler from the USDA ARS in Tucson many years ago published work indicating that bees did respond to sound. He showed that bees briefly stopped movement when exposed to the sound waves produced by a vibrating C tuning fork. The effect was very short-lived. It's more like the bees hesitated rather than they stopped. I've seen this happen, and every colony, the movement just kind of stops, like you stopped a video. But it's only for a few seconds. But, again, more recently, honeybees do have a close-range hearing structure that's used while dancing to announce a successful foraging trip. Johnson's organs found within the honeybee's antennae are a collection of sensory cells that are sensitive to vibration. They are found on the second segment, the pedicel, of the antenna, and each detects minute motion of the distal end of the antenna, the flagellum. So the tip vibrates these cells that are back near the pedicel. Listeners, a thorough article on sound generation and hearing in honeybees was published by Collison in Bee Culture in February 2016. Have a look at that if you want to know a lot more. Honeybee workers share the work inside the hive. What's the specific breakdown of all of the tasks? And does the queen oversee the activities of all these workers? During a normal lifetime, worker honeybees move through a tradition of duties, such as like a student going through grade school. Unless the hive has been exposed to some form of stress, a worker will, in an order of her development, clean cells, feed brood, cap brood, attend the queen, groom and feed nest mates, ventilate the hive, bill comb, receive and store nectar, defend the hive, pack pollen, and lastly, forage. Changes in the worker bee's endocrine system dictates the movement from one task to another, not the queen. Listeners, here's Jim again telling you this is going to be reviewed in years to come. I've seen bees in front of the hive that are working diligently to remove hive detritus and litter from the front of the hive. I've called these bees composting bees. I bet you there's a lot more tasks and jobs that bees can do and will do within the nest than this brief list here. But for now, that's the classic list of the order of development job task that workers go through. What happens if a hive, say, for instance, nurse bees are needed more than guard bees? Can the bees perform functions that they have heretofore stopped doing? Yes, it does appear that bees can either go backwards or forwards in work assignments as needed by the hive. However, glandular secretions in older bees trying to regress are probably not as much as secretions of younger bees. So, can I go out and run a 10K? I could probably slog through it if I had to, but not nearly as quickly and as efficiently as I could have run that 10K 35 years ago. So, and using that as a comparison, bees can go backwards, but they don't always do it very well. I was surprised to hear that the queen is not really in charge of the colony, but rather a consort of young nurse bees rules the nest. The queen is so special, while all the workers just seem to be one of the masses. What's up with that? Well, we don't know exactly who runs the nest show, but nurse bees are able to know exactly what the brood nest needs at any given moment. The queen certainly has her assignment, producing tens of thousands of eggs and producing pheromones needed to stabilize the colony. You know, she probably would not be best suited to constantly be analyzing colony needs, too. Young workers do seem to be in somewhat of a surprising position of authority within the colony. So, yep, looks like young workers probably have a lot to say about it. Listeners, we could go on and on. There's just literally no end to this. I really, really enjoy reading, thinking, studying bees, reviewing, pontificating on rainy days like this. So it just resulted in an article with this unintentional collection of questions that I derived in various classes and presentations. So it helps me understand their life so much as we can, and it makes us better beekeepers. Hey, I really, really appreciate you listening. If you've listened to this point, you are one tough person. Thank you so much, and I look forward to talking to you next month. I'm Jim Tew, telling you goodbye.